Hello, Texans. Welcome to the program. It's a Thursday night, and that means it's time for the General John McClain, Mark Vandermeer, and John Harris with you. John joins us now as we had the draft last week, and it was just mayhem, but that's in the rearview mirror now, although there's plenty to talk about, and schedule release coming up next week as well. So plenty of items on the menu. General, how's it going? Your reaction to the Texans draft haul?
Well, I'm doing great, guys. Thank you very much. I thought they would take a defensive tackle in the second round, and now it looks like if they played tomorrow, Foley Patakasi and Tim Settle would be their defensive tackles, and with Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, and Will Anderson Jr. at end, and I don't see how they're better than they were with Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins, who I still don't know why he was traded. But people say, well, there's a lot of things they could still do. Yeah, but you don't expect them to be able to go out and just manufacture defensive tackle. That being said, unlike last year and the year before and the year before and the year before, they don't need starters. And when you look at their guys, barring injury, Kamari Lassiter looks to me like the only guy that they need to start, because they need a starter opposite of Derek Stingley Jr., and we can't count on him staying healthy since he's missed time in each of his first two seasons. And what would be great if Jeff Okuda or C.J. Henderson could do what Sheldon Rankins did, 1 year make it deal, play so well he gets a $4 million raise.
Well, that'd be nice to get a $4 million raise. General, you talked about and wrote about at HoustonTexans.com the fact that Texans would more than likely, or wouldn't be a surprise for them to take an offensive lineman. Were you surprised that they took Blake Fisher, the offensive tackle, at number 59?
One thing to keep in mind is Nick Caserio does everything he can to get players D'Amico Ryans wants. And I think that D'Amico and Nick, based on what we saw last year, deserve the benefit of the doubt. Now, that doesn't mean we can't disagree. I was very surprised they drafted Blake Fisher. When they took Lassiter and Fisher, they passed up a lot of defensive tackles that had a chance to come in here and play. And Fisher is a redshirt sophomore, and I remember Daniel Jeremiah saying, he said, I think if he'd have gone back to Notre Dame, he'd have been a first-round pick next year. So they hope they don't have to start 11 different linemen because of injuries, and because if they do, you know, there's a chance eventually he'll play. When you look back, you know, Titus Howard has got to be a full-time offensive tackle. He was injured. The only player on the team who started every game was Shaq Mason, and that's all positions. And it's amazing how many guys missed injury, especially in the offensive line, and for them to play as well as they did, which is testimonial to the other players and the coaches, of course. And I can't overemphasize what a good coaching job this staff does, and fans better enjoy it while they can, because if they win again, you know, we know Bobby Slowick's going to be gone, and it could be more as teams have the success. But I think Fisher, based on hopefully he won't have to play when Charlie Heck played after he came off PUP, he didn't play well. And so maybe Fisher's got a chance to be the swing tackle. And so I'm thinking maybe next year we're going to see not Tunsil, but changes made at offensive tackles. So in that regard, it was a good one. And two things stood out to me about this draft. Just like last year, they got a lot of guys who were captains. And as Nick Caserio said, it's not a prerequisite, but they like it because it shows guys who are leaders. It shows what their teammates think of them. And the other thing, the first three picks, I believe, were in college for 3 years. And the other six were in college at least 5 years, and one for six. And it's obvious they like those guys that have a lot of experience to help ease the transition into the NFL. And maybe they can contribute quicker in backup roles because of injuries. And I think for NIL money, if you're going in the first round, you're not going to get more NIL money in college. I remember all those people that were clueless about the NFL saying, oh, Caleb Williams is not leaving USC. He's got $8 million in NIL money. Yeah, well, he's going to get $28 million in the NFL. But those guys who are going to be lesser picks, they get NIL money, and it might be more than they can get being a low draft choice or definitely a free agent. So I like the experience they got in the picks after the top three. And then, of course, we're all going to, as many times as the NFL Network showed Kate Stover massaging that bull on his farm, stuffing his hands, that's got to be the most popular video anybody showed during a draft.
Yeah, I saw that thing maybe 12 times.
Yeah, they were running that a lot.
I didn't hear it. Rich Eisen
just kept saying, I love that video, so they showed it again.
Yeah, farm animals equal ratings, all right? Or ranch animals, however you want to put it. General, apparently I need to be more diligent and selective about push notifications that I accept because I had a story pushed to me yesterday about Dallas fans want the Cowboys to trade for running back Damian Pierce. Well, let's get to that in a moment. Jawar Jordan drafted in the sixth round out of Louisville, a running back. What about this running back mix that the Texans have going on right now heading into OTAs and camp?
I believe in my mock draft on the Texans that I did for HoustonTexans.com, I believe I had a running back in the sixth round. It wasn't Jordan. I can't remember who it was. You know, starting with Jonathan Brooks, but really in the third round, there was a run on backs. And I'm just glad they drafted one because something that we can't overlook. Last year, Nick Caserio had his third consecutive head coach with his third consecutive style of players he wanted. And so now that he knows D'Amico Ryans and his staff better, and he and his personnel people understand what they're looking for, and it's clear what Bobby Slowick wants. Chris Strasser is going to be so much better as a coach because he was in his first year in that zone scheme. So I think if they're taking a guy like Jordan, it's because they believe he can fit in the scheme that they run. And it's a great time to get low picks. You go back to Steve Slayton, and you got and back when Mike Shanahan, he pulled a different 1,000-yard runner out to lower picks in the draft every year because of the zone scheme. Now, back then, not a lot of teams ran it. Now they do. But I think if they think he fits in that scheme, I can't wait to see him on the field. And as a Texans fan, you hope that Damian Pierce, after a year, understands it better and will be better at it. His attitude was tremendous about it last year, and he'll be more than a kickoff returner. And I go back to what Derrick Henry said right after the season. He knew he was gone, and he was asked on a deep dive in The Athletic about regrets. And he said, I wish that I could have learned the zone scheme quicker. And my goodness, if he learned it quicker. So hopefully Pierce will figure it out, and they'll be three deep at that position.
General Kalen Bullock, the safety from USC, started a corner in his career, moved to safety, does have to work on his tackling. But I know that D'Amico and Nick were very, very excited about that particular pick. Given what the Texans have, Jalen Petrie, Jimmy Ward, MJ Stewart, Eric Murray, brought in Lonnie Johnson, where do you think Kalen Bullock kind of fits in all of that safety mix?
Can I brag a minute?
Of course.
I got Kalen Bullock in the third round in my mock draft. Mm. Only one I got right. Well, he's 6'2", and he's skinny, but they can put weight on him. And he can run like crazy, ran in the 4.4s at the combine. He's a center fielder. And you got a ball hawk who can run like crazy. You know, a lot of center fielders are not big hitters at safety. And I think it was a really good pick. And when I've looked at some of these people I respect on NFL.com and ESPN, and they talk about the best pick with each draft, Bullock seems to be almost the consensus as being the best draft pick for the Texans because he was third round and because of what happened to them injury-wise. The more I think about the injuries the Texans had to have to play three safeties off the street because three of them go on IR, and Jalen Petrie is the only healthy one, and you think 11 starting offensive linemen, you're like, how in the world did this team do what it did? In next season, maybe they'll have half the injuries. Maybe they won't start 11 offensive linemen. And think about how much, well, with the schedule, I saw this week they tied for the fourth toughest schedule in the NFL. But how much better they can be if they can avoid some of those injury pitfalls they had. And I think Kalen Bullock, he doesn't have the experience, of course, as those other guys do. But I think he's going to be a really – I'm not sure about special teams. And sometimes when people say, well, they don't hit or they don't tackle, it depends on how you're playing. You know, and if you're a deep safety like he was and on a bad defense at USC, but you come in here and you get better coaching, different type coaching, and maybe they want you to do a few things that add to your game. I look for big things out of Bullock, but it'll be off the bench because they don't need anybody to start other than Lassiter.
Nah, his tackling's not good. Well, this is just not good.
All right.
He's got to improve it.
Knock the ball away.
But if he goes and gets picks, would you rather have five, six picks or a few missed tackles?
Well, like the general said, sometimes you have a great hitting safety you can't cover, you know?
Oh, yeah,
so
totally.
Cover.
Yeah.
You know,
remember
you gotta
Paul
do that.
Krause from Minnesota?
Yeah.
Took us forever to put him in the Hall of Fame, even though he still leads the NFL in interceptions. And he retired four decades ago. And people held it against him for the longest time because he didn't come up and hit people. Well, that wasn't his job. You know, he played on a great defensive line, a great defense. And Bud Grant, his assignment was to kind of hang deep because he could run and he could move for the time. And he did what his job was, he was expected to do. And I don't understand, John and Mark, if you're not noted as a good tackler, and then you come into the NFL, we're not going to tackle squat till preseason starts because nobody tackles anybody. And it must be harder today to come in and need to improve as a tackler because of the limitations of the offseason in the CBA. And so I'm guessing we'll see him a lot. Do you put him on special teams to help him learn to tackle where he's charging down the field, or do you hold him out?
I'm not sure how they'll handle that, but what's interesting about the Texans situation is four preseason games.
Yeah,
and didn't the agent for the Jackrabbit brothers say this?
The Jackrabbit brothers.
That's what I'm going to call them because they're Jackrabbits.
No.
South Dakota State.
I know.
But he said something to the effect of, hey, it's good for them to be undrafted free agents on this team having four preseason games because they're going to play a lot. They're not going to play the veterans. So these undrafted free agents, young players, guys on the bubble, if you will, however you want to define it, will get a ton of reps in the preseason, and they can work on, well, you're playing receiver in that case, but the guys on defense can work on tackling and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, with tackling, it's interesting. I've always felt like if you're a good tackler growing up, you'll be a good tackler going forward. I still think you can learn how to be a better tackler, but I think a lot of the things that you have to work on, you can work on without pads. You can work on footwork. You can work on understanding where the ball is going, especially as a safety, taking better angles, understanding what the defense or what the offense is trying to do. Where are all the receivers? Where do I have to go and change my angle? There's a lot of different things that you can do, and that does come with better coaching. Look, that USC defense was god-awful. And he was transitioning from corner to safety. So when I say he's not a great tackler, well, yeah, there are reasons for that. Not excuses. There are reasons for that. Now, he's fearless. He'll come up and hit you. There's no question about that. It's just you've got to get that finishing technique, and that sometimes can be kind of a tricky beast for young dudes to have to worry about.
Well, that's also, as you just said, so much of tackling is attitude. And if he'll come up and hit people, that means he's going to be a willing tackler.
Yes.
He's not going to be like Deion Sanders, who wanted to play when it was a running game. He wanted to play two hands anywhere instead of tackle people. And that wasn't what he was paid to do. So I can't wait to see how they use Bullock and how he progresses once he gets on the field, because they don't have a defensive back can run like him.
General, looking at some of the other competitions' drafts, like Laiatu Latu going to the Indianapolis Colts with Adonai Mitchell, their second-round pick, what do you think of, let's start with the horseshoe, what do you think of what they did this draft?
I met Laiatu Latu at the Lombardi Banquet. Mm-hmm. He was an outstanding person. Everybody loved the guy, and we pulled for him. And I hosted a luncheon with the Lombardi finalists for sponsors, and he just couldn't have been more impressive. All of them really were. Joe Alt and Brock Bowers and Ellis from Utah. I keep wanting to say Luther, and that is Daddy.
Jonah.
And so when I was leaving, I stayed back to talk to people and to let the traffic disperse. And as I was walking, I see him holding his Lombardi trophy with his family, and he sees me and he puts it down and he comes over and shakes hands and thanks me. And I was just so impressed. Everybody was. So I'm happy for him. I think it's going to be trouble for the Texans because he's going to be real good if he can stay healthy after having to retire from his neck injury. But he's like Michael Penix Jr. He's been healthy as can be the last 2 years. Getting A.D. Mitchell when they did, he'll come in with a monster chip on his shoulder because he didn't get drafted in the first round. And so the Colts now, you know, they're fortified at wide receiver. We saw what Jonathan Taylor is capable of now that he's healthy in that last game against the Texans when he ran wild. And I'm very impressed. You know, if you think how close the Colts came to beating the Texans with Gardner Minshew, I think this division, besides being three teams with winning records last year, it's going to be even better and more competitive this year.
Yeah, there's no question about that, which leads to this question, General, and I don't know if at what point the schedule will come out. Maybe it's next Wednesday, next Thursday. We don't know, hoping that it's next week at some point. So let's discuss that. I threw this at Mark yesterday, and we started talking about primetime games. Which games do you think could be primetime games? Which games would you want to be primetime games? When would you want them? So let's start with how many primetime games do you think the Texans get, and which teams do you think they get primetime games with?
I think that they should get one with the Cowboys. And I wish it would be on Thanksgiving. And of course, it's going to be at AT&T Stadium. There will be a division game, either Indy or Jacksonville, somewhere in there. Both teams had winning records last year. I'm hoping it's not Baltimore because they've never beaten Lamar Jackson, but I'd love to see the Packers because the Packers are so popular. I'd love to see the Lions. You know, they played in Detroit. Was it the last two times? I can't remember. But the schedule is so tough. Would they put Buffalo because of Stephon Diggs? And would they do that? Because, you know, Stephon would love to play his former team. And so the schedule is so enticing. Miami. Tua Tagovailoa, all that speed they have there. Mm-hmm. So it's such a tough schedule. It's such an interesting and fun schedule. You know, that's easy to say right now. I look back after 2019 when they beat Buffalo in overtime in a wild card game and then blew that lead in Arrowhead, and they come back the next year against that first place schedule. The first four were brutal, and it got Bill O'Brien fired just because – it was so tough the way the NFL lined it up. And I believe Baltimore was first or second. In 2020.
Yep.
And so the Texans' expectations are so high. I saw a thing in Athletic today. They're viewed as fifth overall, even though their draft by Dane Brugler was rated 28th, which I think is way low. But you never go wrong with the Packers. And I think Buffalo would be ideal.
What about the year one to year two thing here, General? With all of the accolades that the Texans have gotten, all the praise they're getting, this is going to be really interesting to see how D'Amico Ryans handles this. And he's handling it already because we're in the offseason program already. But what about all of that for young guys who haven't lived through that part of it before, that psychological factor?
Defensive coordinators around the NFL have all his tape now on C.J. Stroud. They'll be studying it all through the offseason. Bobby Slowick will be studying it and find ways to counter what he's going to see. Trading for Joe Mixon and trading for Stephon Diggs, I thought was great. Five defensive players in the draft. Was it 14 defensive free agents re-signing four of their defensive free agents? There's going to be major changes either in the depth or some starting positions on defense because of the quarterbacks they go against. DeMeco knows it. Matt Burke knows it. And Nick Caserio knows it. And it's evident by what they've done in the offseason. Defense, and more defense, but they haven't ignored the offense. And, of course, almost every move they made is with an eye on special teams for Frank Ross, which were the best in the NFL the last two seasons. So people are going to be more prepared. But I think back to last season, you know, he started 0-2, and I thought, oh, my God, why did I pick him to win six games? I should have picked him to win three again. And even when they beat Jacksonville by 20, I wasn't sold. But when they beat the Steelers here by more points than the Houston team has beaten the Steelers since 1991, that's when I was sold. And so they go 10-5 over the last 15. They overcome all those injuries. And it was, to me, just a spectacular turnaround. I know you guys feel the same way about the transformation, but when you play that first-place schedule and you have Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa and Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, Jared Goff, Caleb Williams, J.J. McCarthy, and then the AFC South, that is a brutal array of opposing quarterbacks, and that's why they've devoted so much to the offseason, because they know it's like in Game of Thrones. Winter is coming.
Oh, yeah. But is it coming to Atlanta? General, can you explain at all what the Falcons were thinking drafting Michael Penix Jr. after giving a gargantuan contract to Kirk Cousins?
I don't understand. Arthur Blank, I think, is 82. And one of the reasons they wanted to go all in with Kirk Cousins at any cost, get him, because he wanted to win now. And he would devote the first round pick and more to defense. And that was what everybody thought they were going to do. Of course, we were all shocked. It made no sense. I've thought long and hard about this. My 48 drafts is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It has nothing to do with Michael Penix. It's the situation. And they invite a distraction, a quarterback controversy. What if, like, in the fourth game, they lose to an inferior team and Kirk Cousins throws two interceptions? Fans and media are going to be demanding Michael Penix, who might be the most ready to play because of all his experience he got in college. And I feel bad for him. He had all those season-ending injuries before he transferred to Washington. He wants a chance to play as a rookie. And now he goes where, by Terry Fontenot, the GM's admission, well, if he sits for 4 or 5 years, that's a good problem to have. And I'm thinking, yeah, he'll be 29. He turns 24 this month. And it just makes no sense. Somebody there tried to say, well, they'll be picking lower next year. And I just don't buy it. I just thought it was terrible, and nobody's going to trade for Kirk Cousins and take on that contract. So it's mystifying to me. And of course, I'll guarantee you, Arthur Blank didn't like it, but to his credit, he didn't make him do something else. And that's what good owners do. Callahan and McNair don't like a personnel decision. They may not like it, and they may tell them the truth, but they don't interfere.
Yeah, I have yet to hear an explanation on the Penix pick that really makes sense. Yeah, other than Penix could be a really great player, but in the situation they're in right now. General, we were talking about primetime games. Two opponents I do not expect to see in primetime against the Houston Texans would be New England and Tennessee. So let's go there. Who's going to have the better season, the Titans or the Patriots?
Well, I think the Titans will be better than the Patriots. Patriots play in a tough division, tougher right now on paper than the AFC South, because those teams are further along. I think they're going to be really bad again. And the Titans, they've spent a lot of money in free agency. And then they took an offensive tackle who played right tackle, going to move to left tackle, but they got Bill Callahan, one of the all-time best line coaches, to help him make that transition. And I think people are still going to pick the Titans last. While the Texans and the Colts and the Jaguars could be a little better, the Titans at the bottom could be better too, and it just jams everything up in the division. But Let me ask you guys a question. I was asked this early in the week on one of my shows, and I've asked everybody. Of the teams that drafted the quarterbacks in the first round, which head coach is the most under the most pressure and in danger the most of being fired?
Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Because he's been there, and it always feels like this with the Bears. I mean, how many times can you start over? Mm-hmm. Starting over again. We did it with Mitchell Trubisky. We did it with Justin Fields. Now we're doing it with Caleb Williams. Another generational talent. Let's see how this one goes. Now, they won 7 games with Fields last year, running around like crazy, and a pretty decent defense. They added weaponry. So I think C.J. Stroud, and correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, C.J. Stroud's success tempts a lot of these teams or teases a lot of these teams and their fan bases into thinking it can happen for them.
Yep.
Yes, you can't go into a season expecting a rookie quarterback to lead you to the playoffs. And it's been done. Stroud, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, those guys did it. And but you can't count on it. And the Bears are counting on it. And if they don't, they're going to fire Eberflus and they're going to go hire an offensive coach. And I wonder if Lincoln Riley wants to coach in the NFL.
Oh, boy.
No.
We might find out very soon.
I mean, he might want to, but no.
Okay.
No.
You don't think it'll work?
Yeah. No.
Well, it's not even working in college.
That's exactly my point. He's at USC where he's got every advantage known to mankind, and they went 7-5 with a Heisman Trophy winner and the number one overall pick.
Generational talent. Okay. Yeah. General, thanks so much. We look forward to reading more stuff on HoustonTexans.com.
I will have a column coming up on the AFC South drafts and how that affects the Texans. Thank you, guys.
Love it. Thank you. John McClain joining us on the Texans All Access program. Coming up, who's better? We've got multiple quarterback questions, running back questions, and more here on Texans Radio. Moving right along here on Texans Radio, Mark Vandermeer and John Harris, and it's time to do who's better.
All right.
All right, Johnny, this week's Trevor Lawrence question.
Oh, no.
I work one in every week now.
Every week.
I compare Trevor Lawrence to different. Who's better, Trevor Lawrence or the Muppets? Now, I mean, I'm running out of people to compare him to. Who's better, Trevor Lawrence or Kirk Cousins? Who's better, Johnny?
Oh, Trevor Lawrence.
Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I'll take Trevor Lawrence.
Okay.
I mean, I know that Kirk has played a lot in this league, but I'll go with the upside. And Trevor isn't Michael Vick or, you know, even Jaden Daniels getting out of the pocket where they're just going to go and, you know, just run and take off. But he can do that selectively, where those guys would probably do a little bit more often. He'll do it selectively, and it's those times where he burns you. You're like, dang it, he is 6'6", 225, whatever he is. And he is athletic.
Yeah.
He's not a dual threat guy, and they aren't going to design a bunch for him. But he does enough to get out. Kirk is just a statue back there.
Yeah.
So Trevor can make you pay with that. So is Kirk a little bit more accurate, a little bit more consistent? Yes, yes. We saw Trevor at his best in the second game here.
Yeah.
That, I think, was the best that he has been since I could remember seeing him. And that was pretty darn good. Now, we contributed to our own lack of success that day, but he was pretty good that day.
Yeah, he was. And I know it sounds ridiculous. Kirk Cousins, though, has won a lot of games in this league, played a lot of years.
Totally.
And you got to give him his due for that. No doubt about that. He won, his record in Minnesota, 50-37. It's not lights out, but he won a lot of games. So I just thought I'd bring it up because I like to troll about Trevor Lawrence.
You do.
Next up, who's better, Jawar Jordan or Keelan Robinson? And I'm comparing draft choices here. Robinson was drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars in the 5th round, Jordan by the Texans in the 6th round. And I know this is kind of unfair, but let's do it anyway.
Well, Robinson is a better, just the numbers say he's a better athlete. And you can see that. He's a little bit taller, a little bit stronger, a little bit bigger, a little bit faster. He is not an accomplished running back triple threat like Jordan can be. Now, Robinson will give the Jaguars something right away in the return game. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt that. I don't know that Robinson is going to give them much in the run game, even if he got on the field. I don't think he's got that. I think that was one of the things that sort of held him back at Texas. And by the way, at Texas, I know that Jonathan Brooks and Robinson both gone, but that running game is going to be stout. C.J. Baxter and Blue are tremendous. That running game is going to get even better at Texas.
What do you think the Longhorn record is this year?
Oh, it's good. It's no worse than 10-2.
Wow. Yeah. No worse than 10-2.
No worse than 10-2.
Wow. Good. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's tough. They obviously have SEC schedule, but they're loaded. I mean, they got Quinn Ewers coming back. They got the best left tackle in college football. Kelvin Banks coming back.
They got Georgia at their place. That's nice. Go to the Aggies.
They do go to the Aggies.
And that's going to be a throw the records out game for sure.
That's going to be fun. But Robinson really couldn't break into the lineup there. Now, those two guys behind Brooks were stout. Really, really good. And you're going to show that this year. And they showed it at the end of the year when Brooks was gone. They still had some good running games. And they still had some really solid performances. But I think Jordan, what he gives them in the pass and run game gives the Texans is more than what Robinson can give. Now, Robinson is the equal or better in the return game. But I think Jordan is shiftier. I think he is a better inside runner. He's not going to be the 220-pound back. But guys can be good inside runners because, like Devin was last year and has been throughout his career, they make you miss in space. They can do things in small spaces that other backs can't do. I don't think Robinson's got that. So from that standpoint, I think Jordan was, to me, and I had Jordan ranked above Robinson, but I knew that Keelan Robinson was going to end up getting drafted. I didn't want to see him in Jacksonville because I do think he's got some potential to help them in all three facets. Like, they're going to use Jordan, so it's a good comparison. I just think Jordan is better in the pass and run at a minimum than Robinson is.
All right, let's keep it going with who's better. Here's an unfair one. Are you ready for this
one? Okay, I love unfair ones.
Because the body of work is only 1 year. But who's better, C.J. Stroud or Justin Herbert? Herbert has played long enough where warts do show. Sure. Can't lead his team over the top in many cases. Banged up last year. We get it. CJ talked about Justin Herbert. Mm-hmm. What podcast was that with Micah? Where he was talking about Herbert telling him, hey, you got to be able to throw it out of bounds. You got to be able to check down and keep your body protected and those sorts of things. So this is an unfair one because I think a lot of GMs would love to have Justin Herbert, but you have to have the right talent around him. But you could say that about everybody. So what do you think here, Stroud versus Herbert?
I think the one thing that separates the two, I think there are two things. First of all, Herbert's arm strength is a little bit more than CJ's. Now, we've seen CJ can throw the ball. Herbert's got ungodly arm strength. So there are some throws that he will try, that he will attempt to make, that no other quarterback really in the NFL will make other than maybe Josh, maybe Lamar. That's it. There aren't many that can make some of the throws that he can. You know, moving the pocket to the right because he's getting some pressure, settling up and throwing 65 yards down to the opposite hash. And you're like, yo. So he's got that. But I don't trust Justin to make the accurate throws that CJ can make. I'll take that all day, every day. I'll sacrifice a little bit of arm strength because there isn't much difference between the two. But there is a difference. But where CJ puts the ball consistently for his receivers to make plays in all areas of the field, like Herbert outside the numbers, he's pretty accurate throwing the ball outside the numbers and making those deep throws. And you're like, whoa, he just dropped one in the bucket from there to there. Wow. So he'll shock you with those throws, but then he'll be inaccurate. He'll be inconsistent. CJ is going to be 100% accurate and consistent with that accuracy. And we talked about it. I can't remember what game it was. I think it may have been a Tampa Bay game. We talked about that in the first quarter of the game. Like, CJ seemed off a little bit because those throws weren't quite where they needed to be. Well, he got back on track, if you will, and all of a sudden, holy smokes, he put on a show. Because think of the ball placement, especially in that last drive. He obviously makes the two or three throws before that, but then the ball, the tank on the sideline, the cover two hole, and then the ball in the back of the end zone, which is, it can't be floated. It can't be fired. It's got to be kind of an in-between ball. And he layered it perfectly. I don't know that Justin's going to make that throw because I think he would have tried to laser it and it would have gotten knocked down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference. I think CJ's throwing acumen is more rich than Herbert's. Okay. Herbert's strength is a little bit more, arm strength is a little bit more than CJ's. So that's how it's separated. But you know, Seven's our guy.
Of course. All right, continuing with who's better. What's better? Better innovation, the pitch clock in Major League Baseball, or the clock changes that have been adopted in college football? Better innovation for the sport.
You know, pitch clock in baseball, I think we've kind of seen it. It's interesting to watch a game and see that pitch clock. And I saw it. I went to a college baseball game. I went to Sam Houston, and I saw that pitch clock, and I was like, man, this game is moving along. Like I like that. It makes. I always thought as an infielder, I like my pitcher to work fast.
So they're using it at all levels of college baseball?
Yeah, well, at least that level.
What about like in the Northeast when Bucknell plays Holy Cross? Yeah, do they have a freaking pitch clock? I got to look this up, and I'm sorry.
I don't know. I know they were using it that night. I was like, well, this is kind of cool because it made the game go faster. And as an infielder, as a player, as a position
college
player,
too,
you love it.
Absolutely. I would do my taxes between pitches doing college baseball games.
Absolutely. So I'm going to say the pitch clock. I do think in college football, we'll have to test it out. Because teams are now going to have to get used to having a 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
You know, not having to call. I think it's going to speed the game up a little bit, but then you're going to get to that 2-minute, and then we're going to see how teams really adapt to having that 2-minute warning, having that extra stoppage is going to help. And maybe it makes the end of games a little bit more exciting because you've got that extra stoppage if you are able to hoard your timeouts and keep them at the end of the game. It's going to make games exciting. I'm curious to see what it does to the timing of the game, the quality of the game, all that kind of stuff.
They got
to
get rid of the 3-minute commercial breaks. They have to.
No doubt.
2:30 max, so 2 minutes.
Too long.
With the adoption of 2-minute warning,
exactly.
Will that help out in what I just described? Or are you going to jam another few minutes of commercials in there? Because it's ridiculous. It's college football. And the athletes are still not sharing in the revenue generated by the broadcast, which is insane. I'm all for the players getting paid. Mm-hmm. But they've got to be able to rev share with what is funneling in from TV. That's the whole freaking point here, people.
Yep.
People meaning the NCAA and whoever else.
I think that's coming.
This.
I think that revenue sharing is coming.
It's
coming. I think the noise is loud enough. But if that 2-minute warning becomes just another break, okay, shorten them 15 to 30 seconds and then get you another break at the end with that 2-minute warning. I mean, really, I don't want, you know, because people get all mad about, there's college football, NFL, college football fans hate the NFL, NFL fans think college football is stupid, all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, both games can be different, and they are different. The clock was one thing that separated them. Well, at that point, okay, now we see the difference. Take the college game and look at what the NFL does, look at how they do their breaks, and I guarantee you that's going to make things that much tighter for the TV networks, make it a better product for the colleges, and away we go.
All right, I made a Muppet reference earlier. Who's better? Better Muppet, Elmo or Big Bird?
Big Bird. Big Bird was my guy. Now, Elmo was not created when I was a little kid, but Big Bird, that yellow, just stood out to me as a kid. I always loved Big Bird. He always had a good... He was always so
positive,
nice to everybody.
Positive attitude.
I know everybody on Sesame Street pretty much does, except Oscar the Grouch.
Well, kind of low self-esteem, though, for Big Bird. A little bit.
But I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that to let the people of Sesame Street kind of build him up.
Right.
You know, he was this kind of, you know, Ralph Sampson-like figure and wasn't sure how he fit on Sesame Street.
Oh, man,
but
could he rebound
Big Bird?
Absolutely.
All right,
so my favorite Muppet, Grover.
Yeah,
all-time Muppet.
Yeah.
And underrated, most underrated Muppet is Grover. Now, Oscar the Grouch is a favorite as well, but he can't carry a show like Elmo or Big Bird.
No. Elmo and Big Bird could carry the show. Big Bird, just really gregarious personality. I like that. But
Oscar's like special teams, supporting cast, that kind of thing.
He's like the safety that puts his head down to hit everybody.
Yeah.
You know, he's like that.
I like that.
He's that.
I like that.
He'll get fined, but, you know.
Oscar
was
fined.
Great. I didn't see Sesame Street coming
up. I picked
up
another fine.
Another fine. Put Snuffleupagus at the three technique.
Oh, my gosh.
Big Bird out on the edge.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Now
put Oscar at safety.
Oh, Big Bird.
Grover would be
pass.
Our punter. Grover would be the punter.
He's flexible. He's flexible.
Yes.
He can do it.
I don't know
if he has legs, but he's flexible. All right, that's it for Who's Better, Johnny. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Coming up, what are the questions that I have been asked most often this week? What are they, and what are the answers to those questions? I will have those for you next, among other things here on Texans All Access. The final journey, the final encounter of the evening. I always look for synonyms to the final segment, and I'll find a very good one eventually. But we're experimenting as we go here on Texans Radio. And I promised you this, that I would answer the most asked questions of the week in no particular order that I get. I get from a variety of people. I'm out and about a lot. I've done several events this week. What are the questions that I get asked the most often? I did a Texans event on Tuesday night. I did an event at my kid's high school yesterday, talked to a lot of people. They always want to talk about the Texans. hard to believe, right? Everybody wants to talk about the Houston Texans, and I'm so eager to see what the schedule will reveal as far as primetime games. Will the Texans get maxed because they are the darlings right now of this league, or one of the teams that you could consider a darling of this league? I think last year it was Detroit. Detroit had a really strong finish in 2022, did not make the playoffs, beat the Packers the final night of the season. They put that game on Sunday Night Football in the flex. And then last year, they begin the league year at Kansas City. They were on the schedule, but they put that game as the centerpiece to begin the league year, and the Lions won it. Will they do that with the Texans? These are things I want to know. In fact, that's one of the most asked questions I'm getting. When does the schedule come out? Now, there are many mysteries in this world we live in. I'm going to give you a few. Why was Stonehenge built and who built it? How were the pyramids actually constructed? And why won't the NFL just come out and tell us when the schedule comes out? They don't do it. Why don't they have a countdown clock? The schedule comes out Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central. Whatever the case may be, have that date and time set. Work fills the time allotted. You'll be ready. What are they waiting for? We're not sure. What are you not sure of? You know who was drafted. You know who's on each team. You know what to do. You have a billion models. AI can undoubtedly help up to a degree in this way. I know there are a lot of moving parts. There are a ton of moving parts. I'll give you an example. Here at NRG Stadium, the building can be held for certain events like a concert or whatever by the county. It can happen. And that might block out a certain week or two. So this kind of thing could be going on at many NFL buildings, and you have to take all of that into consideration if you're Mike North and crew trying to come up with the best broadcast schedule, because let's be honest, that's what it's about. You want fair play, but you want to set it up so you have outstanding nationally televised games and great matchups down the stretch. And I said this last night. You could get the schedule next week. And in all likelihood, by the way, it's coming out next week. You could get the schedule next week, and it could say something like, in the final 4 weeks, Jags, Titans, or Jags, Colts, Titans, Colts, something like that. You know, four division games to close it out, at least three. That is going to be tough in itself. Never mind the fact that you have Baltimore coming in, Buffalo coming in, Detroit coming in. You have to go to Green Bay. You have to go to the New York Jets, presumably a lot better than they were last year with Aaron Rodgers. You have Miami coming in here. I think all the games on paper are extremely tough, other than maybe, as we said with John McClain earlier, other than maybe on paper at New England and against Tennessee twice. But hang on a second, folks. You know that these games can be very tough. Tennessee wasn't very good last year, but they gave you all you could handle in the game up there. I know you weren't playing C.J. Stroud, but you had to use every speck of overtime to win that game. If Fairbairn doesn't hit that field goal from 54 yards, what a kick, doesn't hit it, you're ending up in a tie, and that could change history down the stretch for the Houston Texans. So that's one of the questions. Another question I get is, how's C.J. Stroud looking this offseason? We don't know. First of all, they are in the offseason program, just completing week three of the offseason program. But they're not out there full 11-on-11 yet, OTA style. That's a couple of weeks away. So when I get out there, believe me, we'll be talking about it. But he could look great. He could look okay. He could look however he's going to look. And it's not going to matter until you get to training camp. But you know he's going to look really good. I mean, C.J. Stroud, right? This is year two, C.J. Stroud. Let's see what he brings. I see the guys around the building a lot. I see them in the lunchroom. I see them in the hallway. But I don't hang out in the hallway and wait for them to come out of the locker room and ambush them with questions. Just see them in passing. We're co-workers in this building. It's just fun to bump into these guys. I mean, I've seen a bunch of them this week, and it's always enjoyable to see the players, especially this time of year. You know, there's no stress yet. There's no game stress, but these guys handled it so well last year. All right, another one. How's Tank Dell doing? Tank is doing well, according to Nick Caserio on Sports Radio 610 this week. He talked about Tank making great progress, so that's a good sign. But we'll see when we see, right? When we see him at OTAs or whenever we will see him for the first time on the playing field. But the most important thing is that he's okay. He obviously survived, and now you need him to thrive. You know, there's the human side of this. Then there's the football side of this. So let's just see how it all plays out. Okay, another question I've been getting all week long. The uniforms, do I like them? What's my favorite? I ask people what their favorite is. I think the H-Town and the Battle Red tend to be the favorite uniforms of people I talk to. For me, I think the sneaky hot uniform is Liberty White. And I talked about this a bit with Johnny. Liberty White with the dark pants, obviously the dark helmet. I think that's going to be a super cool look on the road. I guess they'll open on Liberty White Day. Home opener at the stadium will be Liberty White Day again, but I'm not sure. We'll see when the game themes come out. But I think that uniform is going to please a lot of people. It's going to be aesthetically pleasing when they see it. So I get that question a lot as well. Another question I've been getting a ton this week. Did I go to the Stones show? I work in the same building where the Stones were. I think I talked about this on the draft show, actually, because they were rehearsing that day. A week ago Thursday, when we broadcast round one of the NFL draft, that afternoon, I was walking through the service level, otherwise known as the hallway here around NRG Stadium, and you could hear clear as day. I went to the loading dock to listen as well. You could hear Heartbreaker, You Got Me Rockin', several other songs that they were rehearsing out there. I don't even think they did those songs in the actual show because I saw the set list. I did not go to the show. I've seen video of the show, but I heard them rehearse here. I've seen them two other times here, and I get asked, hey, if you're a Zeppelin guy, why do you call the Rolling Stones the greatest rock and roll band ever? Because they are. And I am Zeppelin guy. This is subjective. It's music, folks. It's music. Everybody's entitled to an opinion. I think the Stones are the greatest rock and roll band. Zeppelin is almost a different kind of music, is it not? But they're my favorite. Zeppelin's my favorite, but I have to give the trophy to the Rolling Stones for playing for decades. This is a 60-year-old band, totally relevant against the Beatles in the 60s, totally relevant against Zeppelin and all the other great bands of the 70s, and really relevant in the 80s as well. You have to give them, you know, tip the cap, give them the trophy. They're the greatest ever. All right, that's it for the questions of the week. Tomorrow, full show, including a visit between Andy Kalou and Fred Weary on Texans OGs. That's actually up on the website right now if you want a sneak peek of that, because in YouTube video as well, is it not? Yeah, it's there on YouTube. That is an amazing conversation with an original Texan and Andy Kalou. So we'll have part of that for you tomorrow and the rest of whatever is going on with your Houston Texans. Stay tuned for Area 45, Sean Bajani, Patrick Creighton. You don't want to miss the show. It's next. Have a great night. Go Texans.